For the New Testament lesson this morning, we have another lengthy reading from the Gospel of John. This is the famous story of the raising of Lazarus. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, those Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there so that you may believe, but let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hand and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. This is the word of the Lord. There's an old story about Sister Mary Margaret, who worked as a visiting nurse. It was back in the day when nuns still wore habits. One day, the good sister was driving around visiting homebound patients, and it so happened she ran out of gas. It also happened she was just across the street from a gas station. She walked over there and asked the attendant if he had a gas can she could borrow. "Sorry, sister," said the attendant. "Some guy was here yesterday with the same problem. We loaned him our gas can and we never got it back." What to do? What to do? The gas was so near and yet so far. But necessity is the mother superior of invention, so she came up with a creative solution. The sister opened up the trunk of her car and pulled out an old-fashioned bedpan, one of those old metal ones they used before the age of plastics. It even had a kind of spout at one end. She brought it across the street, paid the attendant to fill it up, then slowly made her way back across, carrying it carefully in front of her like an offering so nothing would spill. She was just in the process of pouring the gas into the tank when the local Presbyterian minister pulled into the gas station. He stared out his car window in astonishment at this rare sight, a nun in full habit emptying a bedpan into the gas tank of a car. The minister turned to the gas station attendant and said, "If that car starts, I'm changing to Catholic." That would have been a miracle. And miracles, as we all know, are one of the best ways to bring a person to faith. That's what John, the gospel writer, seems to think, because the first dozen or so chapters of his gospel are one miracle story after another. Only John never uses the word miracle. The word never occurs in all his gospel. He speaks instead of signs. Each of those signs points to something significant Jesus has done, something that reveals a little piece of the puzzle that answers the question of who he is. The greatest miracle story John tells is the one we read today, the story of the raising of Lazarus. It begins this way. "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany. He is a close friend of Jesus, as are his two sisters, Mary and Martha. It's no ordinary illness Lazarus has. He's in mortal danger. Fearing for the brother's life, Mary and Martha send Jesus an urgent message. Lord, he whom you love is ill." He whom you love. Mary and Martha are counting on Jesus' friendship to make a difference. But Jesus doesn't rush right over. He takes his time finishing up whatever it is he's doing. By the time he arrives at the outskirts of Bethany, several days have passed. He turns to his disciples and announces, "Lazarus is dead." Who knows how he knows it, but he just does. Just at that moment, they see Martha walking purposefully towards them. Her intention is to give Jesus a piece of her mind, and she does. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Ouch. If you've ever been in a home where someone has died before their time, then you know how emotionally raw, how chaotic the scene can be. In accordance with Jewish law, Lazarus' body has been placed in the tomb immediately, but the funeral brought little comfort. Emotions are still raw. The pain is very real. But the next thing she says shows what a powerful woman of faith Martha is. "But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Whatever could she mean? Jesus says, "Your brother will rise again." Of course he'll rise again. Everybody knows God will raise up the righteous dead on the last day. What Jesus says next is the most important saying in the whole story, and one of the most important in all the New Testament. "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live, and everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." "Do you believe this?" he asks her. Martha's response is extraordinary. She proves herself in that moment to be one of the first apostles by what she confesses about him. "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." She says it even before he performs his mighty sign. Martha sends word then to her sister Mary, who likewise comes out of the village to meet him. Trailing her are all the people who've been sitting Shiva back at the house. She offers the very same rebuke, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." But Mary doesn't stare back at him in defiance. She collapses at his feet in a heap of despair. Seeing the tears in her face and on the faces of everyone else, Jesus is greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. Then comes the shortest verse in the New Testament. Jesus wept, as so many of us learned it in the old King James Version. Jesus continues to be visually upset. As they arrive at Lazarus' tomb, John tells us he's still greatly disturbed. He orders them to take away the stone from the entrance to the cave. The tomb is rather small, just a hole cut into the rock with a small chamber inside. According to burial practices of the day, bodies were laid inside rough-cut stone tombs like this for a number of months until the flesh decayed. The bones would then be removed a year or so later and placed into an ossuary or bone box, and the tomb would be reused for someone else. There was no embalming, no concrete vault, no preservation of the body. Everyone expected that what went on behind that stone was decay, and in that hot climate, that would proceed rather rapidly. That's the reason for Martha's objection to Jesus' command to remove the stone. "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Some of you may remember the glee with which Sunday school kids of years gone by would receive these ultimate gross-out words from the King James Version, "Lord, by this time he stinketh." But Martha's objection is about more than mere physical decay. Jesus is proposing they put aside the ritual cleanliness taboos of their culture and break a barrier few people would ever imagine crossing, the barrier between life and death. The heavy stone symbolizes the firmness of that barrier. Once Lazarus' body was placed inside and the stone rolled across the entrance, his sisters were quite certain they'd never look upon his face again. The next time the stone is removed, only his bones will remain. But Jesus is audacious enough to pay that boundary no mind. When he calls Lazarus by name and the once dead man comes stumbling out of the tomb, all bound up like a mummy in his burial cloths, everyone who sees it knows they've witnessed something truly extraordinary. It is a mighty sign indeed, a sign of new life, such as they never imagined they would see. Finally, there is that gracious instruction Jesus gives to that crowd as they're staring slack-jawed in disbelief. "Unbind him and let him go." With those words, Jesus calls the church into existence to do what the church does best. For what is it we do as a community of the faithful but unbind people from the bonds of death that hold them back? Unbind them and let them go is perhaps the oldest mission statement of this and every Christian church. You may be wondering about the title I've given this sermon, A Tomb with a View. It's more than just a bad pun. I got to thinking about the tomb of Lazarus and what it signifies. Think about how tombs are designed. Whether it's the rough-cut stone cave of first century Judaism, or one of those hulking Victorian granite mausoleums such as you still run across in some older cemeteries, there's one feature of those structures you never see: a back door. The doorway into a tomb is meant to be a one-way passage. Once a body's laid inside, the entrance is sealed. Its occupant crosses over the threshold carried by the pallbearers and is never expected to pass that way again. When Jesus gives that command to roll away the stone, then calls Lazarus out by name, he's reversing the usual order of things. To the consternation of all who hear him, he's raising the possibility that the pathway into the tomb is not one way. And when those people see Lazarus come stumbling out, probably just as surprised as they are, they realize they're witnessing a wondrous sign indeed. We've got to be careful, though, what we call this sign. What Lazarus experiences in the gospel story is not resurrection. It's not proper to speak of the resurrection of Lazarus. Instead, the miracle is generally referred to as the raising of Lazarus. We could just as well call it his resuscitation, because that's really what it is. Even though 4 long days have elapsed, and even though his body stinketh, Jesus brings him back to life. Lazarus is restored to home and family, and so far as we're aware, he then lives out a normal human lifespan. At the end of that lifespan, Lazarus undoubtedly dies, this time for good. This is not the same thing that will soon happen to Jesus. What happens to him is more properly called resurrection. When Jesus emerges from a similar tomb, from behind a similar large stone, he is not returned to life to die again one day. From that day forward, Jesus is living a wholly new sort of life, a resurrected life, an eternal life. The Apostle Paul refers to him as the first fruits of those who have died. His resurrected life is the first sign of a rich harvest promised by God to all who trust him and who by his redeeming grace are judged worthy. While the tomb of Jesus, like any other first century rock-hewn tomb, had but one door, there's actually no evidence he passed through that doorway on his way back into the world. None of the gospel writers tell of any witnesses who saw him actually walk out. No, according to the New Testament, the resurrected Jesus appears to many different people in many different places, and often unexpectedly. On one occasion, he even shows up in a room filled with his disciples, a room whose doors are locked. When in the Bible the angel comes to roll the stone away, this is not happening in order to let Jesus out. In all likelihood, he's out already, and he didn't need the stone to be rolled away in order to do so. The reason the angel actually rolls the stone away is so the Easter witnesses, his disciples, and even those terrified Roman guards can see in. The stone is a barrier that affects us, not him. Many of you probably know C.S. Lewis' famous children's books, The Chronicles of Narnia. In the first and most famous of those books, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the 4 Pevensey children, who are the principal characters, enter into the magical land of Narnia. They get there by passing through a large, ornate wardrobe in a disused bedroom in the house where they've been staying. Lewis, of course, meant those stories to be deeply grounded in Christianity. I think it's very possible he meant the wardrobe to be a symbol of the tomb of Jesus. But note well the progress of those children's journey. The first one to discover the portal into Narnia is Lucy, the youngest child. She enters the wardrobe by its front doors, fleeing the footfalls of a person she perceives to be a threat. She presses her way back through all the hanging garments that smell vaguely of mothballs and finds, to her astonishment, there is no back to the wardrobe at all. Lucy presses on and eventually comes out to that snowy landscape where a single gas street lamp is glimmering and where she and her brothers and sister will have all sorts of magical adventures in service to Aslan the Lion. Aslan, of course, is a symbol of Jesus Christ. The point is, the children are certain there's but one entrance to the wardrobe, as thinks most of humanity as they ponder this experience called death. But Jesus promises us a tomb with a view. The vista we will one day see from there is by grace a pathway to a new world, a new sort of existence, following the trail blazed by this one we call the resurrection and the life. It is him we worship. It is him we praise. It is him in whom we trust. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.